top of my don't you dare f*** this up list. Radio Drone. Welcome to another episode of Radio Drone, a sequel episode, because it's the sequel to the last two episodes. I'm Josh Hadley. With me, as always, is Cecil the T.
Yes, I'm here.
Hopefully with us is Peter, who is having major Wi-Fi issues, so he may not be here the whole episode, but let's hope he is.
It's a squeakquel.
Shut up.
No.
I don't want you on the episode anymore.
Just for that, karma's gonna kick me right in the dick and the call's gonna drop out.
Well, you deserve it. If you guys want to do something with dicks, you can always go to adamandeve.com. Use the promo code DROME, D-R-O-M-E, and you will get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, a free Power O-ring, and free U.S. shipping. Just use the promo code DROME at adamandeve.com. That said, the last two episodes we looked at what were so-called the worst sequels of all time, although Cecil and I refuted a whole bunch of those. Let's look at good sequels. Now, I want to throw this out there right away, at least for my part. I can't speak for you guys, but I have a feeling you'll agree. Some of the sequels I'm going to talk about tonight are sequels to amazing movies. So I'm not trying to say, oh, one is better than the other. For instance, like Alien and Aliens, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. A sequel can be just as good as the original, but a lot of people think if you say, oh, the sequel is better, it's a great sequel, they automatically assume that means the first film wasn't. So I just want to throw that out there. Doesn't always mean that the first film or an earlier film is bad. What is your favorite sequel?
I wanted to go for something that wasn't as obvious, and I'm going to go with Guyver 2. Because that one, because you were just saying, doesn't always mean that it's better or worse or whatever, but in this case, it's so much better. Guyver 2 Dark Hero is such a vast improvement on the first film, which is actually, it's great. That one's a really fun little Stuart Gordon film with, you know, effects by Screaming Mad George and stuff like that. But the Steve Wang sequel with the same effects team, with a far better fight choreography team, with David Solid Snake Hader as the Guyver character. Fight scenes are amazing. It's gruesomely violent. It feels more like the original manga and the cartoon. That's sort of a go-to sequel for me. Not even as far as a really good follow-up, but one that is an example that the second film in, well, I guess it's not really a series. There's only two, but a sequel can be better, and that one, in my opinion, is. And anybody that hasn't seen that one or either film, I would recommend both of them, because they're fantastic little lesser-known sci-fi anime live-action adaptations. If you think Dragon Ball Evolution is the only live-action anime movie and decided to put yourself off of those entirely, maybe check out the Guyver movies, because they're much better than, like, that weird Gary Daniels Fist of the North Star.
That's one, yeah, I had on my list too. Guyver Dark Hero is just so good. And I like, the first one's fun, but it's silly, it's kind of cartoony. The second one, it really, they push the dark aspect of it. I mean, it's dark like the anime. And the scene where he jumps off the cliff and turns into the Guyver is just awesome. Like,
holds up. Like, effects-wise, it still looks so f***ing good.
I don't know how they did it. Like, it's that freaking good. It's just, it's awesome. Mm. I mean, the fights are great. It's really, really good. Everything about it is just great. It's really a shame that it just doesn't get the attention that it deserves, because that is just a phenomenal sequel. For me, what I'm going to go with, I am going to, because I know there's a lot of ones that were, like, I know ones that we're going to talk about, so I'm going to bring up Phantasm 2. I think Phantasm 2, like, I love the original. The original was one of the first, like, scary movies I ever saw. It holds a very dear place in my heart. They had a better budget for the sequel, and it shows. Like, it
was
all...
Universal.
Yeah, it's Universal. So it was all on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, there are some movies where you look at it, and you're like, I just saw the movie Rings, and I'm like, how did this cost $35 million? It looks like a low budget direct to video or direct to video on demand like movie. It wasn't good at all. I don't know what they spent the money on. And Phantasm 2, it was all on the screen. The effects were amazing. They still hold up. The creativity was there. Like, Don Coscarelli really took a lot of his concepts and fleshed them out so much better. Made the different types of spheres. Made the tall man even more intimidating. Just really pushed a lot of the history and the story. It was just so amazing, and it was depressing because it's so good, did not do well. So when he came back to do the third one, they had like a fraction of the budget.
The third one was independent, though. The third one was not a studio film.
I know, but what I'm saying is that seeing the drop off, like if you were to sit down and watch the series, it's like it is a major like peak and then valley. Like I like 3 and 4. As far as, what they're able to do, it really, really takes a nosedive. And it's such a shame because they had set up so much cool stuff and then they weren't able to really do it. And then it kind of petered out with 5, which is garbage. Five is a fan film. I like to a certain aspect, but it's almost in name only kind of thing. But anyway, 2 is phenomenal. 2 is just an amazing film.
Yeah.
I'll agree with you on Phantasm 2, and I know this is the outsider opinion, but I liked James LeGros as Mike better than Michael Baldwin.
Yeah, James LeCrosse did a really good job. I don't know,
Don Coscarelli didn't like him. Obviously, he wanted Michael Baldwin back in that role, but this being Universal and a studio film, they wanted, you know, a quarter name actor. Hell, it was almost Brad Pitt, but he turned it down to do Thelma and Louise, which was probably a good career move, but that was almost Brad Pitt in that role. I thought James LeGros did a great job, and yet constantly all you hear about, I mean, you watch that Phantasmagoria documentary and Coscarelli is very open about how he did not want James LeGros in that part. And it's like, but dude, you gotta realize, I get it. Michael Baldwin's your friend. Not a good actor though. Gotta see that by this point. I agree. Phantasm 2 is my favorite of that franchise as well. I'm gonna go with, I've got a tie here, and one of them's gonna be a weird one. Aliens is arguably my favorite sci-fi sequel ever. Not Dawn of the Dead. I think Day of the Dead is actually the strongest film in that entire franchise. I know that's an outsider opinion too.
Absolutely.
Day is a great film. No, that's not shitting on Dawn at all. I think Dawn is an amazing film. I think Night, honestly, I don't think that franchise had a stinker until you get to, you know, Diary and Survival. In all honesty.
Even Land of the Dead, like,
I loved Land of the Dead.
Land of the Dead was great.
Land of the Dead is a really cool concept, and it fits with Night, Dawn, Day, and then Land. You have where the world is just in total upheaval at that point, and they're kind of trying to build up another structure with the big corporate tower thing. But yeah, Day is a perfect in between to that. You know, you have people living underground. I mean, I could talk about Day of the Dead, I think, for like endlessly for hours. To me, that is really one of the best and most underappreciated films that I think Romero has done, and there's so much interesting social satire to it. It almost gets to a point where, with its black humor and a lot of social satire and just its vibe, it almost feels a bit like a Paul Verhoeven film.
I'm running this monkey farm now, Frankenstein, and I want to know what the f*** you're doing with my time!
What's that dude's name? Joe Pilato. It makes that film. Absolutely.
Him Joe Garnett! Oh God,
he's so good. He makes that movie entirely. I don't care if he's meant to be the villain, because to me, I don't think anybody is actually good or bad in Day of the Dead. I think everybody's kind of an asshole, and they've gotten stir crazy by that point. The scientist who's feeding the corpses,
Dr. Frankenstein.
Dr. Frankenstein is feeding the corpses of Joe Pilato, of Captain Rhodes' men, you know, he's not, he's trying to make it seem like, oh, the zombies are becoming better. They're not as violent as they used to be, but they've made no progress because all he's doing is just feeding them people anyway. Like they're not doing anything that's actually moving them forward. And you can actually see why Captain Rhodes would be pissed off about that. Like you see where every character is coming from. Like I'm pretty sure anybody as like a commanding officer would be pretty goddamn riled up if they found out that the scientist feeding the bodies of his like fallen comrades and shit to the zombies, the very people that they're like fighting to stay alive from.
I gotta disagree with you on one thing though. I think Laurie is actually a good character. I think she's the only truly good, the Jamaican guy maybe a little bit, but Laurie is actually the only character who is not somewhat of a jerk. I mean, even the helicopter pilot's a drunken asshole.
Look here, woman. I'm short on manpower. I won't have you going around doping up any of my men without orders from me. Is that clear?
Yes, sir. F*** you, sir.
There's that, but then I also gotta go Aliens. I think Aliens, it's such a different film than Alien. It was the only way you properly could have followed Alien up. Cause I know James Cameron had to fight, cause Fox essentially wanted the whole, you know, just kinda remake the first movie, but with a new cast and we'll call it a sequel. They were very, very skeptical of him making an action movie out of their claustrophobic haunted house in space movie. Aliens is just as good. It does what a sequel should do. It expands the universe and takes the characters to new places. Joe Bob Briggs is very vocal about, I mean, he's joking because obviously the Joe Bob character is a satire. One of the reasons he says Halloween 3 failed was it broke the formula. Friday the 13th just keeps making the same movie over and over and over again with different teenagers. He goes, Halloween wanted to do something different. Well, they paid the price, didn't they?
I think the thing with Aliens, though, is that you needed somebody as talented as James Cameron to be able to pull that off, because there are a lot of directors that will take a movie that is one thing. They'll take an atmospheric horror movie or and they want to almost do a genre swap, and they just don't have the talent to pull it off. And he is such a good director that he's able to make that work. He was able to pull in the right creative team, the right DOP, he knew all the people that were necessary to make that happen. And he made an incredible movie. He made just a one of the best sequels ever. The thing is, whereas a lot of movies, you're comparing them, you're like, well, you know, this one did this better, this did this better. Alien and Aliens are so different that you almost can't even compare them, because they're like, it's pretty much a horror movie versus like an action movie with horror elements to it. So they're just that different. So you can't really, you can draw some comparisons, but you can't do like a direct comparison because they're so different. So,
Aliens is really one of those perfect sequels, and it complements the original. Like it's not better or worse. It's a perfect follow-up, as Josh mentioned. Like and you can take the claustrophobic alien and make it into an action movie. All you do, and it's something Cameron did that was very simple, you add more aliens. You just make more of them, and you add in space marines. And then you have even more of a claustrophobic effect, because there's even more of these things running around and they're coming out of the walls. And it's just, when you have James Cameron doing something that has both a horror and an action element, it really works, because this guy also made the first Terminator, which in a way is also a sci-fi horror film. It's not just a futuristic story about a time traveling assassin and the soldier that has to protect the mother who's going to give birth to a savior of the human race. It's also a phone book serial killer thriller movie. Like it also kind of works as like a body count slasher noir atmosphere, just as much as it works as like a hard boiled guns blazing explosion action movie. So James Cameron was the perfect guy to come in and take the helm and bring us a proper sequel to Ridley Scott's original masterpiece.
After what you just said, if you're watching the first Terminator for the first time, say in 1984, you half expect Tom Berenger to start doing karate to try and protect his hookers.
New York doll! Dun, dun, dun. You're so pretty.
But okay, you brought up Terminator. Now, this one is where I also kind of break. I don't know where I fall on this one. I think Terminator is the better film than Terminator 2 as a beginning, middle, and end, as a character arc. On the other hand, Terminator 2 is arguably one of the best action movies ever made. So I'm not sure which one I would pick. Terminator's the better film, but Terminator 2 is the more fun film.
Terminator 2 was also revolutionary. Like, Terminator 2, for better or for worse, really was the movie that made CGI a thing. Cameron incorporated it with The Abyss, but they weren't quite there yet.
It was only a minute and 34 seconds in The Abyss total.
And it took, I think, some ungodly amount of render time to get that minute. It took like 37 years worth of rendering time in order to get minute and a half. Like something absolutely atrocious, you know, like because the computers just could not handle it at the time. But they had learned from that and were able to do in Terminator 2 and really take that and make the transforming, you know, the T-1000, the liquid metal, and oh my
it
god.
It still looks so goddamn
good.
Okay, here's my question. How do 1991 CGI effects still look good today, but early 2000 CGI effects don't?
I have an answer.
That's because there's more CGI in movies now, whereas they used it very carefully in early 90s movies. Like, just look at Jurassic Park. The dinosaurs in that look a billion times better than the ones in the newest one that just came out. And it's because we see so much more of the dinosaurs. Just like in Terminator 2, the liquid metal effects and all the other like little Terminator effects and the little CGI that they snuck in, it shows up just the right amount of time, which is why I think on a technical level, Terminator 2 is one of the most perfect films ever made. When it comes to special effects, when it comes to pacing, when it comes to action beats, when it comes to soundtrack, Brad Fiedel's score in that movie is just amazing. The color palette of the film itself, the action sequences and how intense and awesome and just high impact they are. Yeah, the morphing scenes of the T-1000, everything is used to a perfect level. Nothing is overdone. And everything is used exactly to the point that it needs to be used. I personally think Terminator 1 is a better movie. Its effects are dated, but I prefer it. It's a great little neo-noir, cyberpunk, time travel, almost horror slasher kind of movie. Arnold is super intimidating in it, and Michael Biehn is a badass, and Linda Hamilton is a great arc. But Terminator 2, objectively speaking, when it comes to technical level, when it comes to special effects, when it comes to standing the test of time, big effects blockbuster film, I personally don't think, even to this day, action movies that come out, big blockbusters that claim to be the next this or the next that, Terminator 2 still takes the cake as one of the greatest, on a technical standpoint, action films ever fucking made.
To go back to the thing that... the reason I believe it was John Carpenter who had the answer to this. It was either John Carpenter or one of the guys who worked on The Thing. I can't recall where I heard it, but the reason why CG is so lackluster these days as opposed to back in the day when you would see it and it would be impressive. I mean, there was some bad CG, but there was a lot of stuff that just looks so much better than it does now. And it's because that movies are so rushed nowadays. They used to get a year and a half of pre-production, and that's where they would do all their storyboarding and their working, and they would really organize everything. And then that way, with stuff like the CG, with like Jurassic Park, they would be able to incorporate, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to blend the models with the computer aspects. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to make it all seamless. And now they rush full headlong into it without a proper pre-production time. They get into the film and they shoot everything on a green screen, and then they just are like, okay, they give it to the CG, you know, the computer animators, and they don't a lot of times give them proper cycle. They don't give them enough time.
Yeah.
So there's so many times where we'll get movies where it's released before the final render. So you'll get
Escape from LA, some of the worst CGI of the 90s.
Because they rushed it. They cut almost
5 months off their post-production.
Out of post-production.
Or even just look at the Star Wars prequels. Like, if you've ever watched the making of for those, it's George Lucas sitting in a chair pointing at the directors, just directing from a chair with a blue screen, and it's just actors standing around or walking, and then everything else is added into post, which is why everything looks so fake.
I had found out there was a movie, Sound of Thunder. They filmed so much of that movie on a green screen or blue screen. What happened happened was after they got done filming, they went to pass it off to the computer guys, and they were doing all the computer animation, and then the company went bankrupt. So they wanted to try to recoup some of their money. So they were releasing like first and second renders on that.
Except that one. I know this is off topic, but on that one, go watch the trailer for A Sound of Thunder and then the movie. They finished the effects in the trailer. The trailer, these CGI effects look great. Those scenes in the movie look like ass.
Well, it's like what happened with the Hulk.
The CG was better in the trailer.
The CG was better in the trailer because they had more time. They are like, because what happened was they gave it, you know, they knew these were the scenes that they were going to put for the trailer. So they gave the guys more time to put it, and they put it in the trailer and it looked great. And then everybody went to see the movie and we're like, wait a minute, why did that look like shit? But we just saw it months ago and it looked good. But same thing with Sound of Thunder. I think they had their budget was like $80 million, and it got, by the time they were done filming and they started working, the budget was cut down to $30 million. But by that point, they had already used almost everything. And so they were using just whatever, whatever animations they had. And the majority of them were like one step above wireframe.
Exactly. Okay. One last thing about Sound of Thunder before we move on. That also has one of the worst blue screen moments, green screen moments, whatever, I've ever seen. The scene where they're in future Chicago and Edward Burns and his niece are walking, and it is so obvious they are walking in place and it's the background that's moving. It looked so laughable. I went, are you fucking kidding me?
That's one of the greatest, most unintentionally funny moments I've ever seen. It is so bad. Like I remember watching it and I was all like, cause I like Edward Burns and I thought, oh, it's cool. They're going to do this. And I remember seeing that and I was like, oh no. Cause that's really early in the movie.
Yeah, it's real early in the beginning. It's real early in the film. And it's like they're clearly walking in place.
It's so bad. If you haven't seen it, you really, I'm sure it's probably on YouTube or something. It's so bad.
I'm going to go to another one here. We haven't discussed this, so I don't know where you guys are going to fall. I know I'm in a vast minority here, and I'm talking about the original franchise, not the remakes. I like Fright Night 2 better than Fright Night. I think it's more fun, has better villains, has better actors, has better effects, and flows better as a movie, has a better sense of humor. It's not taking anything away from Fright Night. I like Fright Night 2 better, and most people hate that movie.
I sort of like them both equally for different reasons. Like I do like Fright Night 2 a lot for, you know, you got more monsters. It's got kind of a different pace to it. It's got a bit of a different sense of humor. It's, to me, it's sort of the same way Evil Dead 1 and Evil Dead 2 are. Like they're kind of different movies and I enjoy them for,
I like Evil Dead 2 better myself.
Yeah. Well, for me, I don't like either one better. To me, it's sort of they're great for different reasons. It's the same type of movie, but handled a bit differently. Like I like the more of the build up that the first Fright Night has, but Fright Night 2 has a little bit more shit going on in it. So I feel like they're both fun for their own reasons. I don't know if I could, actually pick a favorite between those two, but I do really enjoy Fright Night 2 for sure.
I like Fright Night 2, but I do think that the first one is better. Like it's, and again,
but Tracy
this is a case,
Lynn!
I know, but this is a case of where I'm not saying that, much like how we say that if the second one is better, that doesn't mean the first one is bad. Even though I like the first one better, I'm not saying that the second one is bad. The second one is a very good follow up. The second one is a fun sequel. It's got Tracy Lynn in it, who I adore. I'm just partial to the first one. I would have preferred if Tracy Lynn would have been in the first one instead of the chicken.
Amanda Beers.
Amanda Beers. I was trying to think of what
Marcy
was her,
Rhodes.
Marcy Darcy. Instead of Marcy Darcy, I would have, then one, it would be no question that one was the better one. But, I do like one, and I think that two is a lot of fun. But it's just not as good to me as the first one was.
Along those same lines, and maybe I'm kind of going off of our topic here because it isn't technically a sequel, but in reality it is. Speaking of Tracy Lynn, as much as I like Class of 1984, I like Class of 1999 better.
In 1992, there were 543,767 violent incidents in American high schools. In some cities, the areas around these schools were beginning to fall under the control of violent youth gangs. By 1997, the number of violent incidents had tripled. Gangs had taken control of large sections of these cities. Some schools were shut down. The year is 1999. The gang-controlled areas have become known as free fire zones. Kennedy High is located in the middle of a free fire zone. The police will not enter. There is no law. The Department of Education of Defense has been formed to reopen the schools and control the gangs.
Yeah, Class of 1999 is so much.
It's not a true sequel. It's more of a spiritual sequel. That's why I'm kind of like, eh. But you know, Class of 1999, I liked better.
You can sort of pretend that it's like in the same universe, and it's like 15, 20 years later. Because I mean, even in the first one, they already had like metal detectors for the schools, and you had like gangs that were ruling everything. So it was kind of it does work as a spiritual sequel. And to me, it's the same thing with again with Fright Night 1 and Fright Night 2. I really like them both for different reasons. Class of 1984 is an amazing commentary kind of movie. The rising of street violence, the rising of
and
violence
of Michael J. Fox.
And an introduction of, was that his first movie?
That was his first movie, yeah.
That movie is just awesome in its own right. It's a perfect social commentary movie. As I said, rise of violence in schools, which is something that's very even relatable today. Like that is happening. A lot more bullying is going on, a lot more violence in schools. You have all these school shootings happening. Class of 1999, though, as a cyberpunk kind of movie, literally cyberpunk, where it's futuristic and you have punks. So you have cyborgs and punks, cyborg teachers that can do rapid fire spanking, and
Pam Grier was so hot in that too.
Oh, Pam Grier was awesome in that movie. She was easily honestly, all of the cyborg teachers were great. I love the old man spanky teacher. I love the gym coach
Patrick Kilpatrick.
Yeah, oh god, he's awesome. He's got the rocket launcher arm, and Pam Grier's got the flamethrower. And the other teacher, the older guy who looks like Bernie Sanders, just looks like I don't even know if he's got like a special power. He has like a vice grip hand or something, doesn't he? Or he's just like super strong. Like I forget exactly what his
The absolute best part of Class of 1999 is how by today's standards, how dated it is, not the effects or anything, one line of dialogue. These completely autonomous, self-thinking, and self-aware androids.
1 million megabytes.
Do you guys realize I have flash drives bigger than that?
Flash drives that you can get from, like, the dollar store have more
exactly. I bet when they made that in 1990, 1 million megabytes sounded like a huge number.
Well, yeah, that was sure back in the day.
Just like it was the Johnny Mnemonic factor is, to this day's standard, Johnny Mnemonic is just a typical $5 USB.
Yeah, didn't he? I think it was like he had like a 1 gig hard drive in his brain or something.
Yeah.
But again, at the time, oh wow, that's so amazing. But I mean, with Class of 99 especially, huge. Oh god, I mean, I think most computers had like a 10 megabyte hard drive, you know? So a million megabytes, oh my god, they didn't even have a word for that yet.
Well, okay, let's go on to another weird one. And I don't know where you guys are gonna fall. Now this is again not an official sequel, although this is legally not an official sequel. Diodato's follow-up to Cannibal Holocaust, 1985's Cut and Run. I don't like it better than Cannibal Holocaust, but I love Cut and Run.
Civilization has introduced countless evils to this mysterious jungle, but not terror. Because here, terror was born. And here, terror will live. As long as outsiders dare to enter the savage wilderness, two reporters stumble into a troubled paradise. And wind up running for their lives.
We can't just sit here, Mark. We'd be asking for it.
Because beneath the sheer beauty lies a world of utter madness. Today's headlines erupt in a timeless thriller.
Your journey ends here. Forever.
Cut and Run,
It's the one story you won't see on the 6 o'clock news.
That is just an awesome 80s movie in general. You have fantastic Claudio Simonetti music. It's super sleazy. It's super 80s. It has a decapitation scene that, in my opinion, rivals the one in Exterminator. And that dude pulled in half by his nuts like a wishbone. Like, Cut and Run is just a perfect sleazy 80s movie. I don't like it better than Cannibal Holocaust either, because it barely even feels like the same type of cannibal movie, but it's just a perfect 80s movie. It almost feels like what the Miami Vice movie should have been.
Yeah, it's very much a Miami-based movie, but Deodato says on the DVD, it's for all intents and purposes, is the real sequel to Cannibal Holocaust, but because he doesn't own the rights to Cannibal Holocaust, it legally isn't.
Well, yeah, I mean, it works in that. There are cannibals and all that stuff, but it...
And it deals with the media and all that. You can see he's going over the same ground, but a lot has changed since 1980 to 1985, so he kind of updated, I guess, what he needed to say.
The ending is fantastic, too, with the dude that, like, the villain of the film that gets, like, decapitated on live TV, and they're trying to stop the broadcast.
It's Richard Lynch!
It's awesome. That's maybe his best role, I think, ever. And that's such a, I remember watching the movie for the first time and I knew it was coming. I knew it was going to, something f***ed up was going to happen. But the way that they handle it in the film, it's every time I watch it, it's a genuinely shocking scene. And the decapitation itself, like, you almost think that really is Richard Lynch getting his head cut off. Like, it looks.
No, see, I'll disagree with you on that. To me, the shocking scene in that movie is when Michael Berryman and the Aborigines, okay, they're down in South America, but whatever their version of Aborigines would be, when they're raiding that cocaine village near the beginning,
and they take
that lady and they're spearing her through the knees and through her shoulder blades, and they start raping her. That scene is just brutal.
And when Berryman, I think, he just starts lopping their heads off while they're on the deck and stuff like that. Like, it's a savage fucking scene. The whole movie is. It's, to me, again, I will label it as the quintessential sleazy, gory 80s movie. It's the one that I would suggest anybody that just like, I want to watch something, violent and weird and very 80s and synthy this weekend. And I'll immediately say Cut and Run. It's got cocaine, it's got cannibals, it's got synth, it's got neon, it's got drug dealers, it's got Vietnam jackets. Did I mention cannibals? I think I did. It's a perfect 80s movie.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it though. But it is a very solid follow-up.
I disagree with this. Say Lethal Weapon 2 is the best film in that franchise. I don't understand why. I think the first Lethal Weapon is easily the best film in that franchise.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't dislike 2. I like 2 a lot, but I think that 1 is just, it's more of a powerhouse movie because, like, I mean, there's so much action and comedy, but there are a lot of, like, really emotional scenes with Mel Gibson.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, I mean, you really, really feel like this guy is on the edge. Like, he is going to either kill himself or he's going to go out in a blaze of glory. And in the second one, like, I really do enjoy it. Like, I think it's great, but it's a little more one-liner friendly and it's
a little
more
action movie.
Of an action movie. And it's still really good, but, 1 is just by far the better movie. I mean, Mr. Joshua is the freaking villain and that end fight is just
no backup.
It's so good.
So it's such an amazingly choreographed fight. And it was one of the first movies, at least of that time, to like utilize, mixed martial arts, like Brazilian jiu-jitsu. That was one of the first times you actually saw like a fucking arm bar in a movie, which is pretty revolutionary for like a movie that came out at that time. It was like a different form of martial arts and fighting style. Cause usually you'd see like karate or, you know, taekwondo or boxing, but this one showed like grappling, which is something you would see a lot more, especially, you know, with UFC becoming a thing and, MMA taking hold of culture and sports and stuff like that. That wasn't something you saw much of in 70s and 80s movies, except for maybe like occasionally, you know, Bruce Lee would bust out an arm, but who remembers that? Like that, it's something that shows up randomly at that time. And I think it was very, that fight alone was incredibly revolutionary. When it comes to Lethal Weapon 2, though, I like it. The only one I don't like in that franchise is 3. I felt like that was the weakest
Seriously?
One.
Seriously? 2 and 4. 4 is terrible.
4 isn't terrible.
Oh, 4 is great.
Will me to you, Riggs. Will me to you.
Jet Li is awesome.
Jet Li, in my opinion, rivals Mr. Joshua. He was just as good of a villain. Because you know what? He was actually sympathetic because he, in the lowdown of the whole thing, like he was just trying to protect his own family. You actually felt for Jet Li's character, and he was a total badass. Like he was like kicking both Danny Glover and Mel Gibson's ass like they were nothing. That fight scene when I forget what's happening. I think like the building is like flooding or something, but it's been a while since I've seen 4, but 4 is a really underrated sequel, and it's much better than 3, and I actually prefer it over 2. To me, when it comes to Lethal Weapon, 1 and 4 are the strongest ones in that franchise.
I do have to say Lethal Weapon 2 does have one of my favorite comedy moments in the franchise, though. When Danny Glover's at the South African embassy.
Mr. Jones?
Right.
Sit down, please. Well, what can I do for you today?
Okay, I have this problem, this very delicate matter. I have a friend of mine who wants to immigrate to South Africa.
Yes, of course. I can certainly help him do that.
Oh, sure, but I want you to talk him out of it.
Talk him out of it?
Yeah.
Whatever for?
Well, you see, this is such a bad time for him to go to South Africa. I mean, with all the trouble and everything, okay?
Oh, look, why don't you ask your friend to come back later in the week? We can sit down.
He's here now. Where?
Yeah, he's here now. Where? Alphonse.
How you doing? I think there must be some mistake.
Say what?
Sir. Listen to your friend here. He knows what he's talking about. I don't think you really want to go to South Africa.
Why not?
Because you're black.
You are. He is.
Of course I'm black. That's why I want to go to South Africa. To join up with my oppressed brothers. To take up the struggle against the tyranny of the racist, fascist, white minority regime.
Fascist, white regime.
One man, one vote.
One man, one vote.
Free South Africa, you dumb son of a bitch.
You dumb son of a bitch.
Look, I've heard just about as much as I want to.
Hey,
I'm going to ask.
Hey, what's happening here? Hey, back off. Take this.
Yes, but you're.
I think that's one of the best comedy moments in that franchise, personally.
Free Africa now, you dumb son of a bitch! Yeah, you dumb son of a bitch! One of the things that makes Jet Li so much of a badass in 4, and it's so subtle, is there's a scene, I'm pretty sure it's when he shows up, for either the first or second time in the film. Mel Gibson has the gun with the laser sight on it, and he points it at his chest. Jet Li looks at it, and, like, tries to, like, brush it off of his shirt. Like it's, what is that? Like he's annoyed.
Yeah, that's awesome.
By the laser, and it's so, like, yeah. This dude's pointing a gun at you, and you're just like, yeah. Like, it's so good.
Like, he's flicking a bug off of his shirt or something. It's great. Jet Li's
so subtle.
His physical presence in that movie is astounding, how badass Jet Li is in that movie. And it's a shame we don't see him as much anymore, except for when he gets together with Stallone to do an Expendables movie. Like, I think Jet Li carries himself, and he proved it in Lethal Weapon 4. And I don't get why he didn't stay a bigger name. Like, to me, that's why 1 and 4 are the best, is because they have the best villains. You have Mr. Joshua, Gary Busey, in 1, and you have Jet Li just kicking all kinds of ass and being f***ing awesome in 4.
Speaking of Danny Glover, I like Predator 2 the best film in that franchise. I think Predator 2 is easily the best film. Predator 2 does what a sequel is supposed to do. It expands the universe and goes in a completely different direction. And I think Predator 2, in a strange way, its biggest failing is that it's a Predator movie. There are moments where I'm getting into this.
It would absolutely still work as just like a crime film.
As a near future crime film,
Colombians.
Yeah, Peter, there are parts in that where they're getting into the whole drug war angle, and I'm so into that. And the Predator actually just kind of wrecks the cool drug war story I'm into.
Yeah, it's the opposite of the first movie, where in the first one you're kind of waiting for the Predator to start showing up. Like, it's kind of a generic big guns, the jungle shooting stuff, and it's like, okay, when's the fucking alien gonna show up? And when the Predator shows up, that's, to me, in my opinion, when the movie really does get awesome. It becomes this alien horror survival movie where, you know, the Marines are getting picked off one by one and they're setting up traps. It's the suspense angle in the first Predator that makes it work. And the fight at the end where Arnold is camouflaging himself, and it's like more of a battle of wits than an actual battle of physical strength. Whereas Predator 2, the whole movie, in my opinion, is incredibly strong. It's the storyline itself, which was actually based a lot. In fact, like those drug wars were really happening at the time, and the Colombians and the Jamaicans just cutting each other down with automatic weapons, and the police being almost helpless at that time, because I think the economy was really shit at that time. Like, they just didn't have enough police, which is why a lot of vigilantes were coming out of the woodwork, and a lot of crime was on the rise at the time. So Predator 2 utilized that perfectly to create this kind of very believable future. It's almost in the same, other than like some of the weird looking guns. It's a future you could buy, much like the one in RoboCop, where it's like what you would actually be more realistic in a future world would be an economic collapse and a rise in crime, which really is happening, and something that's more believable in corporations running everything. It's not so much in Predator 2, but it's more of a rise in crime and vigilante justice and police being kind of helpless, which is such a cool thing to thrust a Predator into, because it's so much different from the first movie. You have the Predator really going on a big game hunt, because he's got two gangs that are kicking the shit out of the police.
Technically three gangs if you count the police.
Yeah. So it's like that almost makes the Predator in two seem like even more of a badass, because honestly, technically, isn't it like in the novelization it says something that the Predators are actually she's or something? Or the...
No. The Predator in the first movie was female. The Predator in the second one was a young, inexperienced male.
Yes. So if you look at it in a way, Predator in Predator 2 comes across as more of a badass because of what that particular Predator is thrusting itself into, is this massive drug war in this already crime-ridden city. And just as you said, if you were to take all of the Predator out of it, it makes for a hell of an awesome police versus crime drug war kind of movie. Like, it still works because you've got an awesome cast already. You've got Danny Glover, you've got Maria Conchita Alonso, I think is her name. You got Bill Paxton. You got this awesome. You got Gary Busey again as an awesome corporate dickhead villain. It works perfectly even without a Predator in it. The Predator is just that ice cake of sci-fi horror awesomeness.
A fucking alien.
I love it when he says that. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh my.
Oh my. But Predator 2 was hated. Predator 2, go read reviews at the time, it was just destroyed by critics. Were like, yeah. Wow, there's no future in this franchise if they're going to go in this direction. And this film was just hated. I mean, it was hated to the point where I love Predators. But Robert Rodriguez is very open, and he said, we're not going to make the same mistake Predator 2 did. We're sticking to the formula. Oh. So even Robert Rodriguez was like, Predator 2 is not a real Predator movie.
Yet his Predators is nowhere near as good as Predator 2 was. I like Predators, but it's like, it's the third best Predator movie, and that obviously, Predators is the weakest one. To me, it goes Predator 2, Predator 1, and Predators.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I love Predators 2, or Predator 2. I have gotten, like, not into arguments. Predator 2 is better than Predator 1, and you get like the, what? No, it is for Predator 1.
But Arnold, I don't have time to bleed. And it's like, what? One-liners and Arnold Schwarzenegger? I love Arnie. Predator 2 is better. Danny Glover is a better actor. There's better action. It has a better, I forget who.
It's a better
who
story.
Directed, who directed Predator 2? The guy who did, he also did a movie called Judgment Night. Stephen Hopkins is a great director. He did one of my favorite, sort of lesser known little Emilio Estevez survival action movies, Judgment Night, which also has a very Predator 2 vibe to it. And what I love about Predator 2, and it's something that Stephen Hopkins brings to the table, is he's a huge comic book fan. He wants to give his movies a sort of pulpy, pulp novel, pulp magazine, comic book kind of vibe. And you can see that both in Predator 2 and also in Judgment Night. He utilizes night shots really, really well, utilizes shadow and color extremely well. He makes it look sort of the way being outside at night would really look, but with a stylized style to the angles and the shadows.
He actually made okay, just the way because Peter, part of that movie is a heat wave. He made that movie feel humid and uncomfortable, didn't he?
It feels scorching. It's right up there with how hot you feel when you're watching something like Falling Down. It has that vibe where you're watching in the middle of winter, and you'll actually kind of feel a little warmer watching it because it looks excruciatingly hot. And I don't know if it was the lens he used. Obviously, they were really, I think, shooting.
It was really a good DP, probably.
Well, yeah,
it had to be sweating a lot too. So
yeah, but it looked perfect though. Like it had it had the right amount of soft focus, I think, to the film, to where it really did look hot. Like, I mean, you can put sweat on people and, you know, you can sprinkle some water on their face and make them look like they're sweating, but they're really sweating because it's actually really hot. And I think the color palette used for the movie and just what they, I don't know if they did it in post or on camera, but something, it had to also be done with the lens used in the film, because it's not only shot on clearly a hot heat wave in LA, but it had to also be the use of cameras, the use of lenses, the use of color, which Stephen Hopkins is just amazing at doing. I think he's a real underrated director when it comes to that. And I think he did a better job than McTiernan did in Predator 1, because that one is also meant to be really hot. That's taking place in a jungle, and it really was hot when they filmed it. The actors were dying of near heat stroke, but it doesn't feel as hot as Predator 2 does.
I absolutely agree. And you know what? I think we're going to finish this next week, because I got a whole lot more I wanted to talk about. So I think we're going to do Best Sequels Part 2. Cecil, all these sequel ones get sequels. Isn't that weird?
It makes sense.
Because I want to go over some of the ones that are considered the best that maybe we don't agree with. Like, there are some on these lists that I found where I'm like, no, you're absolutely crazy. And with this new year coming out, 2017, we've got another sequel to Alien coming out, technically a sequel to Prometheus, which I'm not holding out a lot of hope for. I mean, it Alien, stars Danny McBride and James Franco in an Alien movie. I don't have a whole lot of hope
Alien.
For Yeah, Alien Covenant, and we've got Blade Runner 2049, which I am praying that is the top of my don't you dare fuck this up list.
I'm optimistic about that one. You know what? I think when it comes to, and I'm just going to base this on Mr. Ryan Gosling, who has been very picky with the films he has been appearing in as of the last 7 to 8 years or so. And I think when he makes the choice to be in a movie like this, it's, in my opinion, it's usually bound to be pretty good, unless it's the every now and then when he'll do an Oscar bait flick, or like the that musical thing he was in, that pile of shit that I'm probably not going to watch, and whatever.
La La Land.
La La Land, yeah. And whatever, sometimes he'll appear in something like a Crazy Stupid Love, like a rom-com thing. But when he does a serious movie, when he does something like Drive or Only God Forgives or Place Between the Pines, movies like this, usually awesome. And I'm gonna say, due to his pickiness when it comes to sort of action-based, drama-based, sci-fi kind of stuff, usually he makes the right choice. And according to the teasers, at least, it looks like it's on the same level visually, at least, as the first Blade Runner was, which it needs to be.
When I saw the first Alien Covenant trailer, I went, when I saw the first Blade Runner 2049 trailer, I went, ooh.
Yeah, that one.
And they're
really
both from Ridley Scott. So I don't know.
Blade Runner, though. He's only producing Blade Runner. It's another.
Yeah,
he's
only producing Blade
it's
Runner.
The director of that, it's that director who did Arrival, I think.
And
yeah.
Arrival was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
But what I'm worried about for Alien Covenant is that it's not really a sequel to Prometheus. I mean, Noomi Rapace was only on set for 2 weeks filming, and then this is supposed to be the sequel to her movie. And it takes place 10 years after Prometheus, and I'm like, you guys really didn't want to follow up Prometheus, did you?
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it. But I mean, I'm gonna be optimistic about it. I enjoyed Prometheus, and I
enjoyed Prometheus too.
I really don't hate Danny McBride as much as you do. I actually quite like him. Like, I think he works as, cause it looks like he's just playing like a space trucker kind of character. He works as that kind of working class curly mullet sort of character. He kind of plays that in, Eastbound and Down, and he works, in the confines of the type of character that he's playing. It's very much in the same tone as the types of people that were the crew of the Nostromo in the first Alien movie. Just these kind of, working class, kind of beer belly, scruffy looking dudes. I think,
Who's scruffy looking?
Danny McBride.
All right. On that note, Cecil, where can we find you before we sequel this next week?
You can find me at escapistmagazine.com, goodbadflix.com, as well as goodbadflix on Twitter and Facebook.
Peter, where can we find you?
You can find me getting drunk tonight on Twitter at Cinematica, on Facebook, The Cinemasochist, on YouTube, The Cinemasochist, and on 1201beyond.com.
You can find me at 1201beyond.com. You can contact this show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Guys, try to be a cut above. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold. Have a good night.
Elimination! Elimination! I don't know what the disease. It's only too late. What's that coffin wheeze? Radiodrome is a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.